We're going to do, we're Parshat Bereishit. Very rare that we do Parshat Bereishit. You know, the calendar was kind to us. Simchat Torah was on a Monday, and here we are, ready to go. So, I thought we would do, and I'm using as a basis Nachshoni's Hagut B'Parshat Torah, Hagut B'Parshiot. It's a very wonderful book. It's also in English, if you know. There's a set, the green books, five-volume green books, okay, which is worth, it's worth noting. And we've never done before the apple, Chava and the apple. You know why we've never done it? Because it's not an apple. But okay, yeah, aside from that. we'll start from there. We'll start from the end of Perek Bet. Perek Bet, Pasuk. Pasuk. It's so hard. Every Pasuk is a sugya. Literally, every Pasuk is a sugya. The last Pasuk in Perek Bet. Pasuk Chaf Hei. So I want to start. It's very interesting. Because the Parshat Bereishit, really, I have a friend. His name is David Gottlieb. When he was a rabbi in Baltimore, he gave a series of shiurim on Bereishit. Seriously, I think 20 or 30 shiurim on Bereishit, on Parshat Bereishit. And it's worthwhile to listen to. It's all in Wayu Torah. I listened to a bunch of them. And the issue of the creation of man is extremely relevant today, if you think about it. There's this idea in the world of computer science today called AI. Anybody familiar with the term AI? AI? No one? Artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence is it's in your phone now. For example, so you can talk to your phone and you'd say to your phone, you know, well, you know, when is the next World Series game? And this guy has to know what a World Series is. It has to understand. You know what I'm saying? This idea of artificial intelligence is the next, it's the next step in technology. That all these companies are really racing to try to win the artificial intelligence race. Actually, you can buy now on Amazon. You buy this thing, like, and you, it sits in the middle of your house. Like we in Israel, we don't see these things, but you know what I'm saying. And you press a button, you ask it questions, right? That's the idea that you're going to have this assistant that's going to be able to interact with you, and answer questions. And it's a very sophisticated thing, because if we think about the way that we talk, there's so much information in the background that we don't understand, or that we understand that we take for granted, you know. You understand what I'm saying? Like even I say, just to be able to identify what words you're saying is tremendous technology. So there's this thing called, this idea in technology development called the singularity. Singularity is, when does technology become self-aware? Right, you familiar with this? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. When are we? Well, it's in the movies also. Correct. Right. Even now. I think there was an article today, I think in the Washington Post.
You can also say, like, in WhatsApp, and all of a sudden it knows which words you're going to pick up next.
Oh, you do that? You talk to WhatsApp and you ask?
No, I don't talk to it, but I do.
Sure.
You're typing sometimes.
Sure. Of course. But that's like the most rudimentary stuff. That's the most rudimentary. So this idea, we're going to see, this idea is reflective. This is the idea of creation. What does it mean to be a person? What does it mean to be an individual? What's the difference between a human being and not a human being? We're going to come to it through the Ramban on Eitz Da'at Tov Hara, but it's a very complicated idea. I personally believe that as great as technology as we have, you could train a computer to do pretty much anything, to identify based on patterns and to understand and to use, you know, big data in order to understand. I've lost all of you, so I'll stop. Okay. But that jump in self-awareness, that's the difference between man and God. Right? Self-awareness and ability to make decisions and judgment, true judgment. And Da'at Tov Hara, as we're going to see, that's the difference between man and God. And so this idea of Bereishit, the study of Bereishit, the study of creation, meaning the very idea that people talk about, this idea of singularity, it denies Bereishit. Because the fact that if you think that a human being can create a computer that's self-aware, so you basically think that there's no difference between man and God. That we're just not sophisticated enough to become like God, but eventually we can be like God. Because I can create a computer, I can create a robot, that's no difference than a human being. You understand what I'm saying? Which makes the study of Bereishit, the study of creation, so relevant today. Science denies Bereishit. Like, you know, sophisticated scientists will deny the idea and will say, no, we'll get there eventually. But it denies the idea that there's a creator, there's a Ribono Shel Olam that creates the world, that has the abilities that we don't. Yeah.
So my husband and I were talking over Shabbos. We were talking how he was saying how Rav Arye Kaplan asked many Rabbanim, is it possible that Tchiyat HaMetim will come from us being able to create with the DNA? And the Rabbanim said, yeah, it's very possible.
So, regenerative DNA, and we can create human beings. We'll be able to create human beings from the DNA?
Yeah, exactly. So it's
here's the trick. But cloning is only genetic. It's not. It's it's only the material. It's only the stuff. It's not the essence. Right. You know what I'm saying? You can clone a sheep, but it's a sheep. Like, you know, even it's all these questions I just wanted to say are these issues are especially relevant today. There's a guy, I'll just say this and stop. There's a guy named Elon Musk. Have you ever heard of a guy named Elon Musk? He built a car company named Tesla. Very, very famous car company. Very, very popular, very billionaire, very whatever. So there's a very famous clip going around YouTube where somebody well-known in technology asked him, what is the probability that we're living in a computer simulation? Okay? And his answer is, he believes that the probability that we're not living in a computer simulation is one in billions. Meaning, he absolutely believes we're living in a computer simulation.
Wow.
Okay. You can sit over here. How are you? Okay.
Are you serious?
Yes, he absolutely believes. If you would ask him, now, do I believe that? Is it hard for you to believe? What does that mean? Like, if God created the world, how do you know? He's not typing in his computer and, you know, okay, let's make...
Truman Show.
What?
It's like the Truman Show.
Yeah, but we believe in the Truman Show.
What?
We believe in the Truman Show. We're in one big Truman Show. We believe in the camera on high. We believe that there's someone controlling from the control booth. We believe all that, except we believe it's God. We believe it's the Ribono Shel Olam. Like, I can create a computer program. I can create a program. Not I don't know how to do this. Somebody knows how to create a program. A simulation on Xbox. That's almost exactly the same as the world in which we live, right? My kids were playing this crazy football game where you could see the blood spit out of the guy's thing when he's, like, tackled, right?
What you do with the other opponents.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable, like, these games. When I was, you know, when we were kids, you know, they're like, right? And we thought that was amazing. Space Invaders. When I got Space Invaders, we thought it was great. Now it's like, it's incredible what they could do. So you said, given the pace of technology, it's not so hard to believe that you're able to simulate, you know, real worlds. That's what they're talking about, virtual reality. What can they not simulate? The one thing they can't simulate, they can make people that look like people, but they can't make people.
Not yet.
So, but that's the thing. Do you believe not yet, or do you believe not ever?
Not yet.
Right. I personally believe not ever. That's the difference between, you know, us human beings and Kadosh Baruch Hu. Let's see. Vayushneim Aperek Gimel Pasuk Kaf Hey. Vayushneim Arumim. Perek Bet. Slicha. Perek Bet. Then Perek Bet. Vayushneim Arumim Kaf Hey. They were both Arumim HaAdam VeIshto VeLo Yitboshashu. God created a man and woman. God created a man, split him to man and woman, placed him in the Garden of Eden. They were both Arumim, naked, man and his wife. VeLo Yitboshashu. Okay, and they were not embarrassed. This is obviously foreshadowing of what's going to come next. Look at Rashi. Rashi's are really important in all these things. Says Rashi, they did not know derech tzniut, to know between tov and ra, good and bad. Obviously, as we're going to see, there's a theme here, and there's going to be a fundamental question we're going to have to ask about this theme. But they didn't know good and bad. They were not embarrassed. A man had knowledge to call names, i.e., remember, God brought all the animals and said, you look like a fish, you look like a dolphin, okay? Lo natan bo yetzer. Man did not, let me translate exactly. Did not place inside of him yetzer hara, ad achlo min ha'etz, v'dichnas bo yetzer hara, until he ate from the tree, and yetzer hara entered him, v'yada ma ben tov v'ra. And he knew what the difference was between good and bad. Okay? There's a huge problem with this Rashi. What's the huge problem with this Rashi? Understanding, ideological. Everybody understand the Rashi? The Rashi is, we know there was no sexual embarrassment before they ate from the Eitz HaDaat. Immediately after, we're going to see, they recognized that they were naked. So what happened? So what's Rashi's answer?
The Yetzer Hara was not inside them yet.
Correct. Okay, what's the problem with that question? What's the problem with that theory? How do we solve it? Yeah.
Why is that bad?
What's that?
How'd
they do the sin before they did the sin?
Well, it's saying they weren't they weren't embarrassed. It's foreshadowing the fact that they will be.
Oh, they will be. Okay, right. They're going to sin. That's absolutely true. But, as Nikki said,
how did they sin without
being embarrassed?
How do you sin if you never had free choice?
Or Yetzirah.
She's going to sin. But if she doesn't have a Yetzirah, well, and that's another question. Is there a connection?
It was just outside of them.
That's very good. It's exactly you already get to the end of the shir. It's an interesting concept. Okay?
It was in the tree.
When you go to the very end? No,
it
wasn't in the tree. What?
It wasn't inside of them. It was
where is it?
It says when they ate the
very
tree.
Good. You got very much to the end of Rav Dessler. We're going to get to Rav Dessler and Rav Chaim Balash and Nefesh HaChaim. So he says very, if you look carefully, I read Rashi for you carefully. You obviously heard shiurim on this, or you made it up on your own. It's pretty impressive. Okay? Look how he says it. Lo natan bo yetzer hara. See how the Rashi couches it?
Inside, was not.
Didn't put it inside of him. But even so. So you have to ask yourself, what was men? What was men? Is this like the ideal? So he has a yetzer hara, but it's external to him. So therefore, what? He does.
He's pure.
He's purer.
Gets influenced by his surroundings.
Sin, I guess he comes into contact with external.
Meaning he has free choice. He's not a robot. He has free choice. He must have free choice, because if he didn't have free choice,
he didn't download the Yetzirah
app.
Exactly. It wasn't inside his phone. I'm saying it's just in the app store.
See, you're kidding, but you're not really.
But I'm just saying that's kind of a.
Like, it's so interesting.
He didn't have an app memory on his phone, so he couldn't download the app.
Yeah, right. It's so interesting.
Then he upgraded.
If you think about it, there's a lot of depth to it. Like, you know, all of us, I hope, have internet Ramon in your houses, right? Why? If our kids really want to, or if we really want to, you can get around it. You know, you have to be clever, but they're all clever. They know how. And the answer is that there's a huge difference between something that's inside, that's internal, and that's available, and that's ready, and something that's external. Right? If it's there, it's so much more moshech, so much more present, so much more, you know, enticing, so much more part of who you are. As opposed to, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're on a diet, don't go to the candy store, because if the chocolate is in the house, you're going to eat it. But if you have to, if you don't have the Ben and Jerry's, and like, I feel like having Ben and Jerry's, but it's up in Machzane Ashuk, like, I don't feel like, you know what I'm saying? You're creating that barrier. And so it's interesting to know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created human beings, according to this interpretation, with the ability to make a choice, but it was much easier to make the right choice. And somehow we messed it up. Did we mess up? Let's see. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, if the ability to internalize that was part of God's plan, did we mess up? Did we ruin creation? I only saw one commentary in the Or HaChaim on it. We'll see. V'hanachash haya arum mikol chayat hasadeh asher asa Hashem Elokim. The snake was the most arum. Obviously arum, how do you translate that? Face value? You said sly, but why are you saying sly? Why are you not saying, what should you say that you're not saying? Yeah. Didn't we just translate Shneihem Arumim Ha'adam Va'ishto? They were both sly. So what you just did is you switched the translation of the same word in the context of two psukim. Why do we do that? Because that's what we have to do it. Because otherwise, how would it make sense the Nachash was most naked? He was? No. So why does it, what?
Yeah, all the animals are naked. No?
Everybody's naked. Adam and Chava were naked. Okay, they were also. How could you be, can you be more naked than any other animal? That's always like the big joke, you know. When you see the pictures of Donald Duck, he wears a shirt, but he doesn't have any pants. You ever notice that? He's a duck. It's okay. Why they give him a shirt? You don't know, but it's an interesting question. Okay. What?
He has gloves.
He has gloves? Donald Duck? Anyway, okay. Nachash was Arum. So you look at Rashi. V'hanachash haya arum. Ma yan zelekan. What is this doing here? Haya lo lismoch v'yaas la'adam lishto katnot or bayal bishem. That God made for man katnot or, he made for them clothing of skin, and he dressed them. Meaning Rashi says, interestingly, Rashi seems to imply here that mankind was always intended to be dressed. Not everybody agrees. Okay, I mean, as opposed to human beings that wore clothing, the nachash was naked. And then it would make sense. Okay, that Rashi seems to understand. But, Ela lelamdecha me'eza siba kapatza nachash aleyem. For what reason did the nachash jump? Ra otam arumim v'asukim v'tashmish le'enko. He saw them naked. He saw them engaging in marital relations. V'nit avela. And he desired chava. Familiar with this midrash? Right, the midrash said that the nachash, some midrashim say the nachash wanted, saw Chava, he had a desire for her, and he wanted to kill Adam. Get rid of Adam, and he gets Chava. You're using naked in a context that we use it, a naked ambition. But naked is...
As in pure, as in untainted, as in the epitome of...
The problem is, you have to say, a room in the context of the nachash means something different. So Rashi doesn't want to do that. You notice that Rashi doesn't want to do that? He wants to say a room is a room. Why?
Why do you have to say that if it's the same word? It must be the same.
You would say that, right? You would say, since it's the same word, it must be the same. So Rashi says that. So Rashi says that his nakedness in the context of his desire. Adam and Chava, they engaged in relations because that was natural to them. But the Nachash, his nakedness was clear to him. He was different. Right? He was something else. His nakedness was more to him than them. Okay? They didn't know. They didn't care. According to Rashi, can somebody be more naked than somebody else? The answer is yes. Depends how you relate to your nakedness. If it's just a fact of life, when you're standing in the shower, you're getting clean. You don't think about it in that way, right? Because that's where you're supposed to be. But on the other hand, in a context of sexuality, the nakedness has a totally different meaning. Says Rashi, yes, the nachash was more naked because he took it in that way. He saw it in that light. On the other hand, look at unklus, obviously. V'chivyan, the nachash, haya, look at the third word, you see it? Unklus on Aleph. Everybody?
Atila.
Yeah.
Unklus. What do you have? Unklus,
yeah.
Yeah. Bechivya is the Nachash. Have was Chakim Mikol Chevat Bera. Chakim?
Have I read there?
From Chacham?
I have Arim.
Where are you? On Aleph? No. Aleph. The Chivya Hava Arim. Really?
I also have that.
Whoa.
Yeah. I also have that.
What do you have?
I didn't know what this
I have. You have Chakim?
Yeah, I have.
And I have Arim.
Wow, somebody's got to do a doctorate on that. Wow. Wow.
It's Chakim, but in parentheses there's Arim.
Wow. Okay. What does Chakim mean? Chacham. But Chacham in what context? What kind of Chacham?
Deceitful.
Right. Cunning. Sly, devious. How does he translate it? Art scroll. I'm sure it's cunning. Okay. Those are your two options. You can say a room means a room, or you can say a room means not a room. Either way, you have a problem. The Torah using the same word twice in different contexts to mean cunning. He was devious. He was different.
Could it mean sexual desire?
Tava. I wouldn't say that. I don't think so. It's unclear. That's a midrash. It's a midrash. Who is this nachash? You guys have Sforno? You have Sforno? Those of you have Sforno?
Yeah.
Who is he? Look. Look at Aleph.
No.
Well, the answer to this question is going to be left open. You're not forced to believe anything. Meaning, where is Gan Eden a real existence or a spiritual existence? The answer is, nobody's ever been to Gan Eden, so we don't know. They were banished from Gan Eden. So, you know what I'm saying? In our computer simulation, And it's not so hard to imagine that it's this other place where the rules of existence are different. Because once you can program it, you can do anything. It's one, I find, once you believe in computers, you can do anything you want, basically. Right? You know, so we can do it, certainly the Ribbono Shel Olam can do it. So the rules are different. The rules of engagement are different. The rules of existence are different. Okay? So this Nachash, well, I'm sorry, where are we? Svarno. Hanachash. See Svarno and Hanachash? Aleph? Hu Satan, hu Yetzer Hara. The Nachash is the Satan, is Yetzer Hara. Rav Hahezek im Miyut Heyuto Nir'eh. Does great damage with a small appearance. Ki Amlam Yikra Davar B'Shem Eze Domelo. So he says, it wasn't a snake, it's not a serpent. The Nachash was the Yetzer Hara, was the embodiment of the Yetzer Hara. So when the Yetzer Hara appears, how does he appear?
Snake.
Like a snake. Right, so if you think it's a snake on the ground, it's not the snake on the ground. The Nachash was this other existence, this other presence. Okay?
It seems so fascinating. Well, is that the kind of figment of Chabad's imagination, or that it was an actual physical flesh and blood?
You're reminding me of that very famous line in Harry Potter at the end where they're in the train station and he says, is this in my head or is it real? And what does Professor Dumbledore say? He says, of course it's in your head, but why does that mean that it's not real? No? Nobody ever read the seventh book of Harry Potter? Just me? None of you read Harry Potter, book seven? Your kids all read it. Yeah. Okay.
But I thought the
what?
Was always...
Simcha, what? He wasn't talking to me. Okay. I was on his phone. If you take it literally, does the Sforno take it literally?
Well, he says it's a
Satan. Right. Okay. Okay. So this brings me to another popular culture thing. Every year I tell you about it. I read this book called Screwtape Letters. Right? Right? I read it again this year. So deep. So deep. So important. About human nature. And he says the very idea, like they have this machloket in hell, do they reveal themselves? Should the tempters reveal themselves to us? So Lewis writes in his introduction, it doesn't matter if you think that there is this thing called Satan. Like, is the Yetzer Hara real? Of course he's real. Is he part of me or separate from me? This seems to be an interesting machloket in our psukim, doesn't it? You know what I'm saying? How did the Satan appear? Could very well be he appeared exactly, looked exactly like Chava did. Like you're thinking of him as a serpent, as a snake. We're describing his tchunot. He's cunning, he's devious, he's sly, he slithers on the ground. Those are physical manifestations, but the Sforno says that's the Nachash that you know because we happen to call the animal that slides on the ground and is dangerous and poisonous the Nachash. Okay, because he bites, because he stings, because he doesn't really do anything for us. Because we run away from him. But does it make him this person, this thing, any different than what he was? No. You know, it makes our vision of Chava like harder to believe. How could she talk to this thing? You know what I'm saying? But now think very differently about what this Nachash, you know, this serpent was. We'll call him Sly. It makes it very different. He says, "V'alzeh derech kara ha-makom et yetzer hara ha-machti Nachash." All this, the Torah is calling the yetzer hara who causes us to sin Nachash. Bioto domel Nachash. He's similar to the Nachash. Asher to alto b'mitziut me'at me'od. His benefit in reality, in humanity, is very, very small. V'nisko rav im mi'ut har'oto. He causes great damage and he almost never appears. You don't see him. It's so interesting. Very interesting. Clearly, we don't live in a time like my neighbor said he found a snake. We don't live in a time of fear of snakes. But if you look at halakha, like I'm doing Masechet Trumot now, there's an explicit Mishnah that says there's a halakha called Mayim Begulim. Have you ever heard of this halakha? Mayim Begulim? There's a halakha in Shulchan Aruch that's explicit in the Gemara. The halakha says the following. If you leave liquids uncovered for any period of time and unguarded, you have to spill them out. Right, so,
really?
Right, exactly right. Absolutely right.
Overnight,
not just overnight. The Mishnah says, how long is it? the amount of time it would take for a snake to reveal itself, drink, leave its poison, and go away. How long is that?
Not long.
Right. Not long at all. So now let me take it a step further. The Mishnah says that if you left truma wine uncovered, you also have to spill it out. So just to understand the halacha context, that's very, very significant, because we take extreme safeguards vis-a-vis maintaining the kedusha of truma and making sure that nobody defiles it and never becomes tameh. No, it's not usable, right? And this is, and so it's a tremendous chiddush. It's tremendous, like it's almost shocking. And when you read that Mishnah, you realize to what degree they lived with this presence, this constant presence of snakes. Like, because I wouldn't just make it up. They obviously had just a, you know, prevalence of this snakes. It would appear, cause damage, bite people, kill people, and run away. You know what I'm saying? And it was just, you know, something that we just, it's not in our reality anymore. So comes along the Sforno and says, what?
We had something in our yard.
You had one?
Mm-hmm.
In your yard?
Mm-hmm.
My neighbor said he had one next door.
I've never seen those again, but yeah.
What do you mean? It's small, though, wasn't
no,
it?
No, it was short.
Really?
Maybe just because.
Was a viper?
Never,
had it like a thing on the head?
I don't know.
It's right in their house, on their wall.
On their wall?
Climbing up the wall.
Ew.
Yeah, center our snake catcher.
I've also had one.
What?
Yeah. We call the snake catcher.
And he got it? Yeah, a guy who takes a shovel and kills it with a stick. Right. It freaked me out. I mean, whatever. Yeah, there are snakes. There are snakes. What are you going to do?
We've had a few.
What?
We've had also.
All right. Anyway, just be aware. You should be aware. They say now it's less. Like in the summertime, they come out. What?
When they cut down the field.
Now it is?
So
you're not running the fields now?
I haven't stopped since you.
I do too. So be careful. We have to be careful. Okay. Lolin, we should be very careful. Anyway, so he says, why? One second. V'hu shakoach. Okay, this is, he causes a lot of damage and never appears. It's important to read it. V'hu, you see where I am? V'hu shakoach. I'm still in Sforno. Hakoach hamitave. The desire of, the koach, the power of desire. Hamachti, who causes sin. And he does this. Oh, you don't see where I am?
Oh, here it is.
It's really, I'm going to read it again because it's really important. It's really important, very deep, and very profound.
You skipped it.
I did skip. Yeah, you're right there. Vahu, right there. And it comes over here. You see where it is? You guys found it? I'm on Pasuk Aleph. I skipped a little bit. They said Shaya Samael Rochev Alav. Samael was riding on the Nachash. I.e., it's the same thing. The Nachash is the horse of the Eitz Hara. It doesn't matter. V'hu she'akoach hamitaveh. This is the power of desire. Hamachti that causes sin. Ya'aseh ze be'emtzaot hakoach hamidameh. He does this through the power of imagination. Hamovil elav dimyonei hata'anugim hachomriyim. Who brings with it the imagination of physical pleasure, hamatim miderach hashleimut hamuchuvan meit Hashem Yitbarach, who causes us to deviate from the way of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right? The Yetzer Hara, how does he get us to sin? He gets us to imagine that the sin is going to be a million times better than it actually is. Okay? It's Lewis writes this. He says, your job, the sin guy, the Yetzer Hara's job is to get you imagining the future. Oh, when I sin, it's going to be great. If only I had this sin, I'll be fulfilled. If only I had this sin. And of course, we all know that as soon as, let's use the most ridiculous imagination, okay? If I just eat that chocolate sundae, I'll just feel so much better. It's going to make my life so much fuller, so much better, right? I'll be complete, okay? And you're imagining the whole day. I'm going to get home, I'm going to have the chocolate sundae. I'm going to have the, you get home, you eat the chocolate sundae, how do you feel? Right, you feel like garbage.
It was so good.
You're not helping the swore note here. Right. It's
while
good.
While you're eating it, it's so good.
Right. While you're eating it, it's so good. But between you and me, it's not as good as you thought it was going to be. Yeah. Can't be as good as you thought it was going to be. Actually, I'll take it back. The Sunday is not a good example. Because sometimes it is really good. Mm-hmm. It depends. You know, within reason, the Sunday is a terrible example. Within reason, it is good. Right. If it's not sinful, that's not sinful necessarily. Okay? The sin is imagine you imagine it to be better than it is, and it's never as good as it's never as good as it's supposed to be. Never as good as it's supposed to be. Okay. And so he says, the Sforno says, that's the Yetzer Hara. It's the dimyon, the imagination, versus, of course, and what are we supposed to be? We're supposed to use our power of seichel, koach seichel. Okay? And let's skip to the next Dibra Matriel. Haya arum mikol chayata said, how can he be more naked than anyone else? Ki hakoach hadimyoni, he says, this the power of imagination, hamovil tmunot ha-ta'anugim ha-lakoach ha-mit-aveh, who brings this the imagination, the picture of pleasures to your desire, haya chazak pehem yoter mima shaya b'sha'ar ba'alei chayim. So let's see. It's so interesting. See how the Sforno is reading the psukim. Let's go back to Pasuk Chafei. V'hayu shnehem arumim ha'adam v'ishto v'lo yitboshashu. They were naked, man and woman, and they were not embarrassed. V'hanachash, and who is the nachash? The Satan, the Yetzer Hara, who is part of them, haya arum mikol chayat hasadeh, was more powerful. Their nakedness, their imagination, was more powerful in human beings than in any other of the chayat hasadeh and any of the other animals.
But why did you say in them? It wasn't in them.
It was in them. I.e., if you understand as Sforno does, that Satan was not external to them, was part of them. Was part of her, was her Yetzer Hara, then her nakedness is greater than the nakedness of a cow. Why? Because the cow is a cow. The cow doesn't have desire, doesn't have imagination, doesn't have koach ha-seichel. But in her, her nakedness was greater than any other. It does cause this desire. It does cause this need, this yearning for that which you don't have. It's interesting what he does. He rereads the psukim in order to solve the problem that Rashi has. Right? Rashi solves it one way. We in our translation solve it another way. Comes Sforno and solves it a different way. But in doing so, he gives us a really powerful insight into humanity, into desire, into sin. You can't use this for a bar mitzvah, though. I don't know if I would use it for a bar mitzvah, Rashi. Yeah. Tell your son, and we hope, right. Explain it to Kim again. What's that? Yes.
So it wasn't just me.
Right. The Nachash, according to Sforno, is not an external being necessarily. Right? The Nachash is our Yetzer Hara that causes us to use our imagination and inflates our desire to sin. Right? It focuses us on the future. It focuses us on what we don't have, on what we want. It tells us that if I only steal that money and buy that car, I'll be fulfilled.
But if that is the resolution, then how come the sin later on, Hashem said you can't eat from the tree or the Yetzer Hara will go inside you? That was the punishment.
Different perushim. According to the Sforno, I have to tell you, it's unclear from the Sforno. There's a dialogue going on. Is the Nachash part of her or not part of her? You know what I'm saying? You could still say, according to the Sforno, she's having this talk. It's part of her, but separate from us. You know what I'm saying? To what degree is sin inside of us or a part of us that you're listening to? You know, that you have this person talking to you all the time. Yeah, go take it. Should I say, yeah, go take it? Is it a part of who you are or something outside of who you are? And there's a lot of chassidus in here, too, right? You know, like the holy essence as opposed to the mix. Stuff that I don't really know very well.
It depends how distant you get from something. Like, for example, if someone's like an alcoholic, then every day of their life, they have to say to themselves not to drink. But
correct.
If someone was never an alcoholic, then they're distant. They can look at the alcohol.
I totally agree. I think you're right. I don't think it's a yes or no. I totally agree with your assessment. I think it's a question of levels. Like, we all have Yetzer Hara for certain things, and we just don't have Yetzer Hara for other things. Like, we were talking about, my son. We were talking about smoking with my son, and he's like, you never tried it? I never had a Yetzer Hara for it, never once. But other people do. You know what I'm saying? And it's very, you can't judge somebody else for the Yetzer Hara that they have. You know, and the goal is for a person to work on himself to the point where his Yetzer Hara is more and more part of his, almost to the point where it's pushing it out as opposed to somebody pushing it in. Where do we see this? We had like a source. Somebody said, Rav Mertzbach told me the story. He's like, talking about some gadol, and they said, they went to the some gadol, and they said, don't you like, steak? He's like, no, I don't it's just not, doesn't do anything for him. You know what I'm saying?
And this just speaks about this, that your Yetzer Hara works at the point where you're conflicted. It doesn't work at the point where you've already resolved those things. It depends where you're.
That's the battle. The battle is to push him farther and farther out, and his goal is to try to push farther and farther in towards your essence. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so he talks here about, somebody talks about Hergel, about, you know what I'm saying? Like, if, like, I don't know, like, I'm getting up for Minyan my whole life. So the Yetzer Hara doesn't fight me on getting up, because, like, he's not going to fight me on that. He's going to fight me on wasting time with my smartphone before I go to shul and trying to get me to go late. You know what I'm saying? That's his fight, because it's always pushing where your buttons are, as you say. Okay, so Lori, if you would say, I would say that this serpent, this snake, is part of them, but separate, but distinct from them. You know what I'm saying? And when they ate it, it become just, you know, if you want to say it in that way. Does that make more sense? So let's read the Pesukim again. I want to explain to you what he's saying. Remember, we had the problem. Vayushnim arumim adam v'ishto v'lo yitboshash, they were naked. And then it says, v'anachash aya arum mikol chayat hasadeh. The snake was more naked. But we said it couldn't mean more naked, because how could you be more naked? So let's first understand. Rashi says, the first interpretation, Rashi says you can be more naked. Why? Because the snake saw them in a sexual context, and they saw each other in a natural context. So that's Rashi's interpretation. There is such a thing as being more naked. Then we saw Unklus, according to some versions, who totally reinterpreted the word, that the word arum does not mean naked, it means cunning, sly. The only problem is, why would the word Torah use the same word twice in the context of two psukim to mean different things? Okay, everybody got that? Now, the Sforno is saying something much more sophisticated, much deeper. Says the Sforno, the Nachash is them. Okay? So when it says they were both arumim below yitboshashu, yes, they were naked, they were not embarrassed. The Hanachash and the snake, i.e., the Yetzihara, the Satan that was part of them, Haya arum mikol chayat hasadeh, made them more naked than any of the other animals of the field. Why? Because they were human beings. Because they had intellect. Because they had self-awareness. Because then they had desire, imagination, yetzer hara. That does make you more naked. Human beings are more naked than animals.
What does that mean, more naked?
We have a sexual.
Well,
we put our sexuality in a context of good and evil, of desire, as opposed to just a context of procreation of nature. You know what I'm saying? We don't think of eating or, you know, using the bathroom. It's not good or bad. But sexuality has a desire element to it, an element of yearning, right, of good and bad. Okay, so that the Nachash recognized that human beings have this potential more than others. So you're raising a very interesting question. You're raising an interesting question, a very interesting question. Remember we saw in Rashi, I really thought we'd cover more. Oh, whatever, it's all good. Remember we saw in Rashi, Rashi implies that God dressed them even beforehand?
Mm-hmm.
What?
He dressed them with
lunch. No, katnot or. Rashi says, really, the pasuk comes later, but really he dressed them earlier. There's a really big chidush, which means according to Rashi, human beings always had sexuality. They always were meant to be dressed. You know what I'm saying? Which is different than we've thought until now. We've thought that before there was no sexuality and after there is sexuality. Comes Rashi, and this actually fits in with Sforno. This fits very much with Sforno.
Sexuality is not. I mean, it's got a purity and
yes and no. Can you be a human being? Wait, and this is obviously the question. Can you have the idea of a human being? I don't know how to answer your question. Right? That's the question. I think that's what we're talking about until now. The whole idea of the idea of levels and to what degree. I think that it was to some degree they had to have some level of sexuality because they're human. But the question is, to what degree was it part and parcel of them, and how much did it overtake them, and how much did it control them? You know, it's a question of levels, to what of power. Let's read on a little bit.
Not bad. Not
bad.
It's not like evil in the terms of it's showing the satan as imperfect. Like if sexuality in this context is the drive or the desire, which can be a good thing, which is a good thing in the context of a holy kosher marriage or whatever. But I'm saying it shows that this became...
But Nikki would say, and I'll put words in your mouth, that's not Yetzer Hara. That's Yetzer HaTov. I don't need the Nachash
that's
for
that.
I don't need the Nachash for that. Even if I had no Nachash at all, I would still have that Yetzer. It wouldn't just be like eating dinner. It would be like eating dinner because Lichvod Shabbat Kodesh. I'm eating in order to be Mekadesh. I'm enjoying it to sanctify. Is that, do I need the Yetzer?
That's it.
I don't know the answer. I don't know. I simply don't know. Is that Yetzer Hara? If a person had no Yetzer Hara, would he still sit down and say, oh, I love Chalent? Or would he just like, Chalent?
Taking this desire for food and it's gluttonous and it's disgusting that you're saying.
No, why is it gluttonous and disgusting? You're saying it's not gluttonous and disgusting. You're saying that it's in order to sanctify. Why do I need a Yetzer Hara for that? If I only had a Yetzer HaTov, I would say, Shabbat, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to enjoy Shabbat. And I like, Chalent. Why does it have to be bad? Do you know what I'm saying? That why do I need a Yetzer Hara? I understand you're quoted. What you're saying, there's definitely sources that allude to what you're saying. Why is every the problem you're saying is that every physical drive, every physical desire, is essentially negative, and the only so that's a huge machlokes. Remember we had that we saw this in Nazir. Laura, what you're saying is a huge machloket. It's a subject of great debate. Remember we saw in the Nazir, right? There's a big machloket about the Nazir. The Nazir brings a korban chatat. Mm-hmm. So why does he bring a korban chatat? So there's two opinions. One, he brings a korban chatat because he stopped being a Nazir. And the other opinion is exactly the opposite. He brings a chatat because he made himself a Nazir. Shezir atzmo min hayayin. So I happen to think that that's just it's a machloket tfisatit. It all depends on your outlook on life. Right, our physical desire is essentially negative, and the ideal of our human being is to become an ascetic and to remove himself.
It's a Christian way of thinking.
It's a Jewish way of thinking.
That it's all negative.
Of course. There's two views. What do you mean?
I thought it was a Christian idea.
What? No, Christianity negates the other possibility.
That we're sinners and.
Correct. It negates the other possibility, but both are Jewish ideas. We're seeing it in our. Which is it? Is the Nacha is like according to Rashi? Let's see, according to Rashi, if they recognize their nakedness beforehand, and they had a desire, and they had to put on clothes beforehand, what does that tell you? It tells you that they had sexuality, they recognized it, and they had to wear clothes before the sin.
But the desire is not a bad thing if the ultimate purpose is Kiddush Hashem.
I agree. Cholent. Shabbat. I agree. I personally?
If that really is your motive,
I find it more appealing. I find that perspective more appealing. That there is good in Ta'anuk. That it can be used and should be used. And that, like, obviously, it's more dangerous. It's much, much more dangerous. Because if you go to extremes and you say, no, everything Ta'anuk is Yetzer Hara, then it's easier to say, okay, then you have to focus and be an ascetic and, you know, Naziya Nazera Tomina Yayin. Once you say, no, Yayin... It's good to have a l'chaim on Shabbat morning and to enjoy and within reason and it can heighten your sense of spirituality.
But no, why are you doing?
You climbed up to the hill, but you're at the precipice. It's much more dangerous. Much, much more dangerous because it leads you, and this could be the problem about Adam and Chava. If you say that they had no Yetzer, how did they sin? But if you give them a little bit of Yetzer, yeah, before you know it, well, you know, you're eating from the tree. Okay, we're going to finish in 5 minutes. So, we're going to stop on these psukim because we could go through the whole dusiach between Chava and the Nachash is fascinating and important. Okay, let's skip to pasuk vav. Batera ha'isha ki tov ha'etz lema'achal. The woman saw that the tree was good lema'achal to eat. V'chi ta'avahu la'einayim. It was desirous to the eyes. V'nechmad ha'etz l'haskil. It was nice to think about. I have no idea what that means. Okay. V'tikach mipiryo v'tochav. What does he say?
It means to whisper. Yeah,
What does he say? How does he translate it?
A means to wisdom.
Nechmad ha'etz lahaskil. It really, if we translate it literally, means it was nice to contemplate. Okay? Vatikach mipiyo v'tochal. Then she ate. Look at Kli Yakar. Kli Yakar. V'chi tavahu le'inayim, those of you who have it. Ki b'chol chet yesh li'yetzer tov v'kuach im yetzer hara. Every sin, there's a vikuach, there's a battle between the Yetzer HaTov and the Yetzer HaRa. Ki ha-Yetzer HaTov mavticho schar ruchani le'olam haba. The Yetzer HaTov says, no, don't do it. Why don't do it? You'll get reward in olam haba. It's good for you in the long run.
All comes from the
eyes. Yeah. Absolutely true. The Yetzer HaRa meshiva la v'to'en, and the Yetzer HaRa says, ki tov le'lech achar ha-ta'avot ha-muchashod le'en ro'en. Y'all familiar with that psychology, the cookie experiment? What, you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Right.
Kids, when you offer them more.
Like marshmallows, I think it is, right?
Mm, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You familiar?
Yeah.
They put these kids, they put them in marshmallow, and they say, if you wait 10 minutes, I'll give you 2 marshmallows. Mm. Right? They call it grit. You know, if you have grit. That's what we try to teach our children. Don't do what you want to do, because we believe that the reward will be in the long run. The only problem is we don't tell them there's 2 marshmallows. We tell them if you don't eat the marshmallow now, there's no marshmallows, but it'll be good for you. You'll be happy about it. You know what I'm saying? Thanks very much. I appreciate that. Okay? Ki ta'avat ha'olam hazen yi'et la'ayim kol milelech achar midot ha'olam haba sha'ayin lo ra'ata. That's ta'avahu la'aynayim. It's the present. It's the here and now. You could use it as a bar mitzvah. This you could use, actually. The goal of growing older is recognizing that true reward comes for things that we wait for, goals that we set for ourselves. You know, greater goals, becoming better people, growing closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? And that we step ourselves back as we grow older from just the ta'avat inayim. Just, I want it now. You know what I'm saying? A young child, he cries, he's hungry. And as you get older, you start to realize, you know, you have this self-control. And the goal of becoming an adult is internalizing it and making part of who we are as people.
This generation is more challenged than any other
generation. Hard to say. That I don't know.
Because we live in such an instant gratification world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say it's not that we live in a world of instant gratification as much as we live in a world that justifies instant gratification. We live in a world that thinks that instant gratification is good. That a person should, that a person deserves instant gratification.
Yeah. Right? Computer, you talk to Siri, you get the answer right away.
No, what's wrong with that?
That's why kids don't know how to wait for anything anymore. Because they're used to getting that right away. The desire to go study and learn and explore when I can just put my finger on the computer.
You just Google it.
Google it, yes.
Yeah, but are we talking about? I understand what you're saying. Of course, I agree with what you're saying. But you're talking about something different. You're talking about instant gratification in terms of.
It comes from that.
They don't know how to tolerate, all of us, tolerate pain, discomfort, unease, that kind of thing.
I would say it differently. I would say it differently.
It's such a big symptom of.
I would say the challenge of parenting that we have is educating our children that the gratification that they will receive from the work of their hands, from doing it on their own, is worth far more than they'll get by having somebody give it to them, spoon feed them. Like, you can make it in the microwave, or you can make scrambled eggs in the microwave, but it's gonna taste like garbage. But learn how to make an omelet and sit and make it yourself. You know what I'm saying? You can get, Google will tell you, but you'll never remember it. But if you sit and you crack your head on it and you really work, you'll feel good about it. You'll feel better about it. That's much, much harder. Mm-hmm. You know? That's a big challenge. Okay. I want to share with you the Rambam we're not going to do. Let's conclude with Nikki started with. He says, it's very interesting. I just want to share with you one piece, he says, from the Rambam. Like Bereishit, obviously. You could literally give, we could talk the whole year about Parshat Bereishit, which we're not going to do. And he says, so Nachshoni quotes the Rambam, and he says, how is it possible that a person had, like the human beings, Adam and Chava, had Bechira, but didn't have Bechira? How could they sin without Bechira? So the Rambam says something very interesting. He said, this is the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, Chelek Aleph Perek Bet. He says the following. He says, of course people had good choice. Okay? He said, before the chet, before they ate from the fruit, he said, they didn't know the words tov v'ra. It wasn't good or bad. Rather, they knew emet v'sheker. Right? It was truth or not truth. There's no value judgments. Like God said, don't eat it, it's bad for you. Doesn't mean they didn't want to eat it, but it was bad for you. Here, all of a sudden, we see this desire, like it becomes tov and ra are absolutely subjective. And if you think about it, what determines our opinions about things? What determines whether something is good, how we feel about it, our value system, how much we've inculcated it, right? What humanity says about something. This is something we struggle with all the time, right? You know, essential values. Adam and Chava were born, they were created with emet v'sheker, right? Truth and falsehood, okay? When they sinned, he says, it turned into a, what he calls, ha'aracha dimyonit v'subjektivit, an imaginary and subjective evaluations. Like, I think that it's good. Tov hu le'inayim. Right? Ta'ava. It's good to me. As opposed to good to what Ribono Shel Olam wants. And that's obviously something that's clearly the world in which we live today. There is no absolutes. And everything is subjective. Everything, you know, everybody has their own subjective truth. Everybody has their subjective desires. And the world justifies those. Whereas we live in a world of emet v'sheker. And our goal, obviously, is to say, you know, subjugate what you want to what the Ribono Shel Olam wants. That's only if you believe that there is emet v'sheker. There's truth and falsehood. Whereas if you live in a world of totally subjective values, this is a podcast that I really like. I really, really like. And then a guy, and he talks about sports mostly. He's a Jewish person, not really religious in any way, shape, or form. So it happened to be, he took off for Yom Kippur. I was really happy he took off for Yom Kippur because, you know, I told you this, right? So they asked him after this, what did you do on Yom Kippur? He said, well, I used to go to synagogue, but I didn't understand a word of what was going on in synagogue. Really boring, didn't really get anything out of it. So I decided, where do I feel the most spiritual? So I feel the most spiritual when I'm on the golf course. So I spent Yom Kippur afternoon on the golf course with my son. And I felt great. And they were all like, oh, that's so beautiful. I'm sure your rabbi would love it. It's such a wonderful thing. And I thought, this is really the Americanization of what it means to be religious. There's no tov emet v'sheker. There's no truth or not truth. God told you to do this. You don't understand it, too bad. No, where do I feel the most spiritual? What's the best religion for me? And that's not the worship of Ribono Shel Olam. That's the worship of the self. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously what the Satan wants. Don't worship him, worship you. Right. That's the struggle we all deal with. Okay, we'll stop here.